This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. From the launch your online shop stage, all the way to the we just hit a million orders stage. No matter what stage you're in, Shopify's there to help you grow. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/special offer, all lowercase. That's shopify.com/special.
God, I loved it. I'll send you a copy. Bam! Bitch went down.
All right, and welcome back to Horror Queers. We're talking about gay movies. We're talking about horror movies. We're talking about musicals? Question mark. I'm Joe.
And I'm Trace.
We're talking about Stage Fright. Yeah!
Oh my god, that was great. Listeners, lest you think we're talking about the really good 1987 slasher Stage Fright, that is one word.
No,
we're talking about the shitty 2014 musical Stage Fright, which is two words. And oh my god.
Yeah. Why did we pick this? Why did we do this to ourselves?
Honestly, I saw this when it came out because I was so excited. I mean, I love musicals. I love slasher movies. This should have been a
match made in heaven.
It is. This should have been a slam dunk. Even if this movie was bad, which it is, I should have liked it. And I don't like this movie. And so when I picked it, it's actually celebrating its 5-year anniversary the week this episode drops. So I was like, you know what? Did you know going into this that you were going to be doing that?
I swear, I'm only going to do it about 3 or 4 more times.
No, I love it. Keep doing it. It's fine. I don't hate it. So I thought maybe, just maybe, 5 years of time away from this movie and away from my high expectations for it, because I did have high expectations for it, would have like made me kind of appreciate this movie more, and it didn't.
No, not at all.
Not really. Well, we'll get into it.
All right.
we'll talk about this. So, Stage Fright, listeners, in case you don't know what this movie is, it is a slasher musical set at a theater camp. Every single review I read for it, because I did a little bit of research today, there was a commentary on the Blu-ray, but I refused to watch it because I couldn't sit through it again. Every single review compared it to Glee meets Friday the 13th.
Ew, no, that is not correct.
But here's the thing, every single review said that. I mean, that exact comparison.
That's very 2014, right?
It is. And I want to say that might be the year Glee went off the air. So it's probably like, I don't know, it's probably around that time. Glee sucks, by the way.
For you.
Thank you. Glee sucks after the first 13 episodes. So anyway.
That's not untrue.
This movie
went off the air in 2015.
Okay, cool. Yeah. So Glee is still on during. So this movie actually premiered at South By in March of 2014, but it didn't get released until May 9th of 2014. It got a very limited theatrical release about a week or two after its VOD release.
Yeah, this movie was made for video. It was never going to do well with a mass audience.
I did do a little bit of digging on like interviews with the director because apparently he did go around and pitch it to studios, and a lot of them loved the idea. But then when it came down to, oh, you want us to give money to this idea, they didn't want to do it.
Funny how you need money to make a movie. So weird.
And this is without having seen the movie, obviously. They're just going off the idea, because I think the concept of this movie is fantastic. The execution is terrible. But yeah, obviously, like, no studio is going to release like a campy slasher musical. It's just, it doesn't play in theaters at all. So I get that. Anyway, so it was released by Magnolia Pictures in the US and Entertainment One in Canada.
Or E1 if you're going with the lingo.
Okay, I've never heard of them, so good for you, Canadian.
They're still around.
A mercifully brief 88 minutes long.
Sweet baby Jesus, thank goodness.
But it feels longer.
Oh, yes, it does.
I don't know how much the budget was. I couldn't find that information, but I imagine it's pretty low.
Probably pretty low. It's a Canadian film, so it would probably be no more than a couple million bucks.
Yeah. It only opened in 11 theaters, so the opening weekend was actually $3,562 at number 83. The total domestic gross was $7,078.
Yeah, so that's the friends and the family of all the cast and no one else.
Yeah. I mean, but granted, I mean, I'm sure people bought this. I mean, fucking, I paid to get this on VOD back in 2014. my money gone, and I fucking own this Blu-ray now because I bought it for this podcast, and...
Double sucker!
I have paid for this movie twice. So, director Jerome Sable, or I'm sorry, writer, director, composer Jerome Sable, you're welcome.
Mm-hmm. You're probably paying for that golden toilet now.
Yeah, exactly. I don't think he'll listen to this episode, but if you do...
You never know.
I'm really sorry, we're gonna trash your movie.
I'm going to say one or two good things.
No, I have a couple good things. I totally do. This movie for me was a 2 out of 5. So there are 2 stars worth of things that I can talk about with this movie.
Yeah!
Luckily, we are not alone in our opinion, though. You're looking at a 35% on Rotten Tomatoes from critics.
Which is a little better than I thought, to be honest.
Yeah, it's about right. I actually have things to say about some of the critic reviews because... Well, I'll just say it right now. So my Blu-ray has... 3 quotes on it. One on the cover, which, across between Glee and Sleepaway Camp. Stage fright is frequently creepy and quite gory. That's from Fearnet. This movie is never creepy.
It's never creepy. It is gory. That was one of my pluses.
Yeah, no, the gore is great, even though it's relegated to the first scene and then, like, a 10-minute stretch in the third act.
Mm-hmm.
Then we have, from We Got This Covered, a face-melting horror musical ripe with infectious energy and deadly sing-alongs. This is Matt Donato. And I...
Oh, you're going to call him out. I love it.
I know this person. Matt, if you're listening, because I actually told him today that we were recording a movie about this and I was going to trash his review.
You're like, bitch, we're going to drag you.
Because I can't believe he likes this movie. It's a huge piece of shit. And he gave it an 4 out of 5 on We Got This Covered. And he loves this movie. But it was a South By watch. So I'm wondering if he was drunk. And I love that we're doing this because I know if he's listening to this, he can't. Talk back to us. He actually said he wanted to guess, and I told him no.
We're like, sorry, we don't allow straight people on this podcast unless they have baby parts.
It's like, we discriminate. So the other review is mixes bloodshed and Broadway and deliciously adds hilarity. That is the Austin Chronicle, which is my day job.
Wow. There are so many Kevin Bacon connective points to you in this movie. Maybe you should like this movie.
I know. This is Richard Whitaker, who is actually one of my coworkers and a friend. So 2 of my friends have 2 of the 3 reviews on the Blu-ray for this movie.
Wow.
And it's so bad. But anyway, your opinions aren't wrong. The opinions are opinions. But this movie's not good and y'all are wrong. So... yeah, Metacritic, you're looking at a 39 out of 100 and a for critics and a... Oh, a user score on Metacritic of 8.3 out of 10.
What?
8.3 out of 10.
See, and this is why we can't trust data.
It's
climate change isn't real, people. You just can't trust the figures.
I don't know what it was. And, okay, I realize that we are coming off as huge negative Nancy douchebags here. Listeners.
Hello, that's my bread and butter.
I want to like this movie. I wanted to like this movie. I picked this movie hoping that I would like it. We're not going to trash this movie the whole time. As Joe said, we have positive things to say. So before we get to the plot, we have writer, director, composer Jerome Sable, who did all of this. This is his debut feature. He did have a short musical comedy film called The Legend of Beaver Dam, which I actually haven't seen, but apparently it's pretty good.
I watched it. It's funny.
Really? Wait, did you watch it in preparation for this?
Yeah.
Oh, so it's better than this movie.
Well, part of the reason that it works is because it's a short, so it's brief. Like, it's a one-song campfire tale about a kid who's essentially bullied by the camp leader, and then he has, like, a big musical number where he's fending off a monster who attacks the group, and then at the end of the short, spoiler, it's revealed that he actually was the monster and he has killed the camp counselor.
Huh.
It's funny. It's cute. It's, like, 5 minutes.
Well, so, okay. This is the thing that I noticed with short film creators, is that when tasked with making a feature-length film, it proves to be problematic for them.
Which is, to me, the film's biggest issue, is that it feels like it should have been a short or maybe some kind of, like, 20 to 30 minute thing. And when you stretch it out to that 80 minute runtime, it just doesn't work.
No, because there is a good horror musical to be made out of this. The problem is the songs aren't good, the scares aren't good, and it's not funny.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, anyway.
0 for 3.
0 for 3.
They know Repo the Genetic Opera.
Which isn't a good movie, but the songs are good. Mm-hmm. I mean, I think the songs are good. I'm sorry, I realize that's a contentious point because some people hate the music, but I actually really do like the soundtrack for that movie.
For Repo.
For Repo. Yeah.
Okay. I was
not for this piece of shit.
Not for this movie. Okay. Sorry. Continue on.
He co-wrote the music with Eli Battalion, which I kind of love the name. But also for him, this is his kind of first feature. I think he might have worked on Beaver Dam with Jerome.
Yeah, I got the impression that they were frequent collaborators over two projects, which maybe isn't frequent, but I'll go with it.
Yeah, sure.
Put it on the DVD cover. I'll stand by it.
They haven't really done anything since, though. Jerome's, I think he's done some TV since this, but he has not done another movie. Shocker. Oh my God, I'm being so rude today. It's the wine,
wow.
I swear.
How many glasses deep are we?
Oh, I'm on my third glass, but it's a tiny glass, so we're good.
Mm-hmm. Pinky size. Yeah.
Yeah, pinky size. So, before we get to the cast, I just want to point out, there are three editors on this movie.
So, two were fired and one stuck it out?
I don't know. Why does this movie need three editors? It's 88 minutes.
I mean, that to me is one of those, like, is this something that we need to flag? Like, is this a problem? Did something go on? Is that why?
Well, I mean, the editing isn't bad in this movie. I just think it's really weird. Like, because I also think about that. Like, so, I've edited before. I mean, I edit our audio and I have edited video before. I'm always interested.
I'm sorry. Did you pause for like applause or something there? Like, oh, wow.
No. Okay. I was thinking about
it. He's a multi-talented bitch.
Yes. I can edit audio and video. I'm amazing. Amazing.
Oh, Jesus. I was waiting to see if you were going to break out some karaoke for this episode.
So, no. But like, how do three people edit something? I'm actually always. So the writing I get, you're sitting in a room, you're collaborating, you're writing. Directing, okay, fine. Composing music, great. But editing, that requires a very precise hand, and for three people to do it together, I think is very odd. That the movie isn't a jumbled mess of editing is kind of a miracle, considering three people were involved in it.
Well, I'm not sure that I would assume they were all doing the same parts of the movie at the same time. They might have each taken sections? Question mark?
But see, that's weird to me too, though, because then, maybe they're all just like the same style of editing, but then it would feel like, let's say each one got one act of the movie, then it almost would be like each act would be paced differently.
I don't know. I mean, I was trying to rationalize it in my mind and I came up with nothing. I was like, maybe one of them did the musical numbers, one of them did the kills, and then one of them did the boring parts.
You know what? You might be right. I'm going to go with that. That's actually not a bad idea.
Sure. We'll go with it.
Okay.
Jerome, let us know when you listen to this.
Oh my God, he's gonna hate us. The cast for this movie is not fantastic. The lead Camilla is Ally McDonald. I've never seen her in anything, but she is in that Jennifer Lawrence movie, House at the End of the Street, and this Stephen Moyer from True Blood movie, The Barons.
Ooh.
I know, real big name there. But her brother, Buddy, is played by Douglas Smith, who I love in the
HBO. He's been in a ton of shit.
He has, and he always looks like he's cracked out to me. Like, his eyes always look cracked out, but I actually do like him a lot.
Sorry, you said he was in some stuff.
Yeah. So he was in the HBO series Big Love, which, if you've never seen it, is amazing.
Mm-hmm. And he was on that before he made this, so I feel like he was the get for this movie.
Yes. Well, okay, so yeah, he was Amanda Seyfried's brother on Big Love, and the daughter of June Triplehorn, and obviously Bill Paxton, because he's the dad in the polygamous show.
Oh, also, can we pronounce her name correctly? It's Siegfried. Thank you.
Oh, Seyfried. Call back to Jennifer's Body. He was also, for horror fans, in the movie Ouija and The Bye-Bye Man. So with this, he is 0-3 with horror movies.
I was going to say, those are not great credits.
But you can see him currently on TNT's The Alienist with Dakota Fanning. And it's solid, if unremarkable.
I had it on my watch list, but I never got around to it.
It's an easy watch. I think it's like 8 episodes, maybe 10. It's interesting, but it could have cut 2 episodes.
I'll read the book.
Yeah, for sure. And honestly, the only other big names in this, you've got Meatloaf Adday, I'm not good with music. I only know him from Rocky Horror.
Well, I mean, he did Bad Out of Hell, didn't he?
Yeah, I don't know what that is. Oh, but I do know the I Could Do Anything for Love song. That one I know.
There you go. Yeah, I feel like most people are going to know that. That and Rocky Horror. It's good picks.
But speaking of Bad Out of Hell, that actually makes a lot of sense because the review for Stage Fright on RogerEbert.com is lyrics and it says, read this to the tune of Bad Out of Hell.
There you go.
So
it's very much a rock opera as well.
And the main reason that I wanted to watch this movie, besides the fact that it was a slasher musical, Minnie Driver, who I love in every single thing she does. I think she's lovely.
You're gay.
I know. Well, my mom actually hates her, and I think that might be why I like her a lot. But my mom has like a trio of actresses that she hates, and it's Minnie Driver and Jennifer Jason Leigh and Juliette Lewis, because she thinks they're all trash. And those are her words.
Okay, I can maybe understand the Juliette Lewis, because right? Juliette Lewis has played a bunch of trashy characters.
I know.
The other two I don't get.
I know. The Minnie Driver one I really don't get. Jennifer Jason Leigh, maybe because she plays like kind of crazy characters. But Minnie Driver, like, I'm like, I want to be like, Mom, what movie did you see her in that you just immediately associate her with that? I love Minnie Driver, though. I think she's great. I even like that shitty-ass romantic comedy she made with David Duchovny called Return to Me.
Oh, God, no.
No, it's the so good. One? Yes, the heart one.
No. I'm going to say no to that. Oh, God. We're back to your dumb romantic comedy.
His wife dies, and she donates her heart to Minnie Driver, who needs a heart transplant, and he falls in love with her, like, a year later.
He doesn't even love these women. He loves their heart.
Exactly. That's why it's so beautiful. That's stage fright. I don't know if fuck this movie. So, Joe, what's it about?
All right, here is your plot recap. Broadway diva Kylie Swanson, aka Minnie Driver, is brutally murdered on the opening night of The Haunting of the Opera. If you find that funny, this movie is for you. 10 years later, her twin children, Camilla, who is Ally McDonald, and Buddy, who is Douglas Smith, are working as cooks in their guardian, Roger McCall, Meatloaf. They're working in his floundering musical theater summer camp, Limelight. Roger decides to put on a kabuki revival of The Haunting of the Opera in order to attract the attention of Broadway agent Victor Brady, who's played by James McGowan, who I recognize from a bunch of Canadian shit.
Okay, I have no idea who that is.
Yeah. And Camilla decides to follow in her dead mother's footsteps by auditioning for the lead. I feel like when I do these, I read it in Brennan's voice from Scream 101. But anyway.
Maybe.
Much to the chagrin of both her brother and her love interest, Joel, Kent Nolan, Camille co-lands the lead with uppity bitch Liz Silver. Melanie Leishman?
I don't know, okay. But I liked her.
Yeah, she's fun. Sleazy director Artie, Brandon Urinitz, confides in Camilla that he will let her open the show if she sleeps with him, but she can't go through with it. Because she's a goody two-shoes. That night, Artie is murdered by the opera ghost, but his death is covered up by Roger, and the show continues. As opening night approaches, more and more campers are murdered, including Whitney, Sam, and Sheila, who I literally can't remember. Liz is bound up, and stage manager Davis, Thomas Alderson, is made to fill in the gap in the production as Camilla runs around discovering bodies. Eventually, the killer is revealed to be Buddy, her twin brother, who saw Roger murder their mother 10 years earlier. Camilla distracts Buddy, but in the process, he's killed by Roger, who then pursues Camilla until she inadvertently kills him with a bandsaw. She stumbles onto stage, covered in blood, to thunderous applause from the audience who believe it is all part of the performance. Cut to Camilla debuting the role on Broadway, but she's still haunted by memories of the killer. And curtains.
I hate the ending of this movie.
This movie. Ugh.
All right. Well, let's start with the good. Because honestly, the opening scene of this movie is legitimately good.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's fun.
And it's... The Haunting of the... Okay.
Okay. Where's Mel Brooks?
It's... The Haunting of the Opera is fine. There's actually a lot of... So, were you a theater kid in high school or any point in your life?
I was a drama kid, but I wasn't a super musical theater kid. My school didn't have the money to put on musicals. We could only do plays.
Okay, so we did 5 plays a year. Sorry, 6. One of which was a musical in high school.
Yeah, because those things are fucking expensive.
They are. But I'm not a... I don't want to say musical theater junkie, but I do enjoy going to see musicals. I mean, I'm a little bit discerning, like... Honestly, I've never seen Oklahoma, and if it ever came to Austin, I don't think I'd see it. And I know that's, like, probably blasphemous.
I love Oklahoma.
I know. And Crazy Ex-Girlfriend actually spoofed a segment of that this year, so...
Oh, my God. Why didn't we just watch Crazy Ex-Girlfriend instead of this?
I know. Well, all right. So, no. Look, this movie thinks it's very funny, and it's not.
No. Sadly not. The humor is far too obvious and very on the nose.
And that's the thing. And obviously, humor subjective. Some people find this movie funny, and that's... I'm a little jealous of them. I wish that I found a lot of this funny. I did chuckle a couple times. Like, there were... And on those musical theater in-jokes. Like, there was... there were posters for Les Producerables, which I thought was really funny. And, oh, an Alabama! Exclamation point. You know, like Oklahoma.
No, I don't get it. Explain it to me.
That's that's it. That's about like the two times that I chuckled, and those were both in the same scene during Meatloaf's awful song.
Oh God, that is okay. Yeah, I feel like the film opens with a lot of energy, and mm-hmm. for me, I got a bunch of enjoyment out of the opening as well as the like the campers were here song, which also has a very humorous like refrain about gay kids and musicals, which I was like, again, on the nose, but it kind of worked for me.
No, that's actually funny. So like, I mean, I didn't remember a lot of this movie when I rewatched it, except for the brother being the killer and the gay joke in that opening number, which I really, I still thought it was pretty funny, because there's the one kid that is gay and the other kid that is gay but is trying to pass for straight, and his line is like, he's like, I'm gay, but not in that way, and then the other one's like, I'm gay, I'm actually gay. I still think it's funny.
It is. It's the kind of musical number that would traditionally be found at that point in a production, where it's like it's the big group number that kind of opens everything. So, I mean, as much as we're going to shit on Jerome Sable in this podcast, I do feel like he actually knows his shit. Like, mm-hmm. he knows a bunch about musical theater, and he knows a bunch of different types of songs and where they should go. As you said, though, it's the execution of most of these that don't work. But I feel like these opening ones are where he feels most comfortable, and it's where he succeeds the best.
Well, that's honestly what is upsetting to me is, I mean, he clearly has a passion for both horror and musical. And that's what makes it all the more upsetting to me, and what makes this movie more of a failure, is that he clearly loves this, and he clearly has a lot of influence, and he's into it. But the problem is, it just doesn't work. So before this big opening number, obviously, we have your opening scene fake out, where, you know, someone gets stabbed. Oh, oops. It's actually part of the Haunting of the Opera, which Minnie Driver's character is in. And, oh, she I actually love it, though, because I did laugh, because she has that part where she gets stabbed, and like, the camera focuses on her, and she's like, ah, and then she just goes, no, and bursts into song, which is great. I mean, it's really fun, and that is what the rest of the movie is lacking, is that fun that you have in this first scene.
Yeah, and I feel like part of the in-joke is that you're looking at it and you're like, oh God, this is just such a terrible ripoff of The Phantom of the Opera, and the film knows it. And that's the other part that definitely works for me, is those kind of cheeky, knowing winks. It doesn't work later on when the more obvious references to horror start to come out, but particularly in this piece and then that opening scene where Minnie Driver's getting changed in her dressing room, and the opera ghost comes up and starts caressing her uncomfortably naked body, because you look like my mom and I don't want to look at you in your bra and panties. But then we get our first big kill,
which is a great kill. Kill is awesome.
Yeah, people who don't do well with gore or with mouth stuff will not enjoy this opening kill, because it is surprisingly brutal. She gets a knife a couple of times to the stomach.
But and the
then
neck.
She gets it in... Oh, is it the neck? Yeah, no, it's in the neck.
I think it's the neck.
It's in the neck. I apologize. And then it's in the mouth. And then her face just goes headfirst into the mirror.
Mm-hmm.
And this to me was like, oh, okay, whichever one of you three editors did this sequence, pretty good, because it's effective. And that knife to the mouth is brutal. To which you're like, oh my God, this is going to be good. Like, this movie's going to be good.
I also just wanted to mention that this movie does open with a quote. It opens with this. The following is based on true events. While the names have been changed to respect the victims and their families, the musical numbers will be performed exactly as they occurred. I laughed. That's a great opening. And then you have the really gay stage manager who's talking to the kids, and he's like, look at your mother. She's got great pipes and she's fierce. It's so funny. It's so funny.
Yeah.
So, yeah, but you know, yeah. Her death is brutal. It's great. Unfortunately, it is the last time we see Minnie Driver in this entire movie.
Which is shocking to me.
You know why they cast her, right?
Because she's got pipes and she's fierce.
Well, no, because she was in the movie version of The Phantom of the Opera.
Yeah, I don't talk about that.
Because she's Carlotta and it's great. It was a great little in-joke, I thought. But yeah, so that's when the movie stops being good.
I disagree.
Okay, so we cut 10 years later and we have this opening number. Oh, you know what? You're right. I apologize. The opening number is really fun.
Yeah, I mean, it's performed by children, so your tolerance may vary, but it's got a lot of witty little things about how kids who like musical theater are often picked upon and they're bullied, but this is a place of acceptance, and there's that cheeky knowing wink to being gay. But it's also doing that, you know, slightly heavy lifting of saying, like, okay, here are your annoying main characters, and it's getting that shit out of the way via song, as musicals do.
Well, so, speaking of annoying main characters, so, do you like Camilla?
If you say Camilla, no. No, but, obviously no. See, who could like Camilla?
That's my
She's
thing.
She's the worst.
She's so boring. I think, okay, I'm not one to judge singing ability.
Okay, I was like, let's put that into context because...
No. Yeah, I'm sorry. I do judge, but I'm not one to judge singing ability because I don't have the best ear for music or like what sounds good or not. I mean, I fully admit that. Is she that great of a singer?
She's okay. I will confess, as much as I don't like all the songs, I do find the song that she and Liz sing where it's cutting... How do we even describe this? It's... They're overlaid with each other on stage where they're doing that. You were all ever wanted.
Yeah.
Please yeah. note that I dropped my voice an octave for that.
Wait, are you a tenor or a bass?
I'm verse. Wait, what are we talking about?
Wait, so do you do karaoke? Do you sing?
No, fuck no.
Really?
Do you listen? Can you not hear my voice?
No,
you
I
want to imagine this nasal rasp trying to do some TLC song up God. In that karaoke joint.
Okay, no. I really need you to come to Austin. I'll take you to karaoke. This private rooms. You don't have to sing in front of anyone except for me and Andrew. It'd be fun.
Oh my God, that sounds terrifying.
No. Oh my God, no, because karaoke is how Andrew and I met. And no, my go-to karaoke song is Scars, Be Prepared. But I actually have a playlist on my phone of all karaoke songs. So whenever I go to a karaoke place, I have a list of songs ready to go. So I'm like, okay, I need to look for these songs. I'm not just like fucking looking through their karaoke book.
That is hardcore. I feel like true karaoke people have like their songs prepped and ready to go.
Yes.
Whereas people like me who are like, I don't want to be dragged to karaoke are like... I'll do an Adam Sandler version of I Touch Myself by the Divinyls.
Fuck that.
Okay, so Camilla.
Yeah, so she's dull. So is her brother Buddy.
I mean, the biggest problem with Buddy is that he's not in this. He's not a character.
Well, that's my thing. So I remembered him being in the movie a lot more, and he's barely in this movie until he's revealed to be the killer.
Buddy is not in this movie, and he therefore does not make an interesting reveal.
It's so bad. It's a really dull... Also, it doesn't make a lot of... My question... So, all right. The whole thing of this movie is that the mom, Minnie Driver, was in a relationship with Meatloaf, who is the owner of the camp. Which, by the way, the camp is called Center Stage Camp for the Performing Arts, and it just makes me think of that movie Center Stage, which we had just talked about in our Black Swan article.
Mm-hmm.
That's it. That's my whole point.
Okay, I'll allow it.
So she's sleeping with him, but she's having an affair...
With someone we don't know. I think it's supposed to be a stagehand.
I thought it was a film critic.
Oh, would it be the guy that Meatloaf then invites later?
No, I don't think that's the case. But because
that would actually make sense.
No, because remember, because in the flashback to the big, like, you know, oh, this is what actually happened. When he's like, oh, like this person showing up, he said you were like ravishing or like wonderful or something. And she's like, oh, yay, I'm famous. I don't know. So anyway, so basically though, then Meatloaf kills Minnie Driver wearing the opera ghost mask. I'm sorry, the haunting of the opera ghost mask.
No, I think they just call him Opera Ghost.
Sure. But Buddy is in the closet watching him, and he spends 10 years trying to get revenge on him. And when Camilla's like, why didn't you do this sooner? He's like, because I was scared, because Meatloaf did confront him as a kid.
Mm-hmm.
And threatened him.
Which, cut that shit out and just be like, oh, it was repressed memories, and it wasn't until I saw that he was mounting a reproduction of The Haunting of the Opera, or I saw that you were taking Mom's place and it, you know, did something to my boy parts, like, and then I went all homicidal. Because that's what the shit has always done in, like, 80s and 70s movies.
Well, and then he's dispatched too easily, and then you have Meatloaf as, like, the big bad, and it doesn't make any fucking... I mean, it makes sense, I guess, but it's not, like, narratively satisfying.
No. You literally took the words out of my mouth. I was like, as soon as Meatloaf becomes a weird impromptu killer and just starts chasing her, I was like, oh my god, what? Why? No. I mean, yeah, it does make sense, but it's not good.
It's so... The whole movie is just so painfully, like, it's trying so hard, and it thinks it's good. And I think that's why I knock it so many points, is because it is a movie that feels self-congratulatory. And maybe that's not the intention. Maybe that's not what these people thought when they were making it, but that's absolutely how it comes across. And it's very frustrating to watch as a viewer when you're watching something that isn't particularly smart.
Yeah. Is it the horror stuff that rubs you the wrong way, or is it the comedy stuff, or both?
You know, I would say mostly it's the comedy stuff. I think... I was not walking into this movie expecting scary, like, at all. I mean, when you say comedy musical, I'm expecting a horror comedy. So it doesn't need to be scary to be successful, in my opinion. And like we mentioned earlier, the gore is effective. There are some great kills in this movie. You know, you've got Minnie Driver's death. You've got the C-clamp on the foot is really good.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I actually really enjoy that entire kill scene. So that's when Artie, the director, gets caught on stage after being brutally rebuffed by Camilla. And he's like, all right, fine, whatever. And then lights start falling, which reminds me a little bit of Drop Dead Gorgeous. So mm-hmm. I like that.
No, absolutely.
And then, yeah, he gets that clamp in the foot. And that prosthetic work is actually pretty good. Mm-hmm. Some good practical stuff going on there. His foot gets pulled off, which is fake as fuck. But sure, I'll still go with it.
I think it looks good.
And then he fillets a light bulb, which is, you know, for a guy like Artie, well deserved.
Okay, so wait, before we continue with these kills, what do you think about, like, this whole subplot with the director? So I feel like the movie's trying to make a statement, you know, of like, oh, like, I mean, again, we just watched Black Swan with teachers or directors sexually abusing their actors, actresses in the movie, or in the play, mm-hmm. production, whatever you want to do. But I don't, I don't know the right word to use for it, but it just doesn't, it didn't ring very true to me.
I think my problem is I had difficulty discerning how the people who were in charge got their roles. So I thought that Artie was another camper. And mm-hmm. I didn't really understand why he had so much power. And it wasn't until much later that I realized that he's, I think, meant to be some kind of alumni, or that he's actually a counselor. But it's really unclear. And then the same can be said for the stage manager, David. But I think he actually is just a camper, because we see him in that opening dance number. And he seems to be on par with, I think the guy's name is Roger, the other guy.
I don't know his name.
He ends up kissing.
But yes. And, and then...
No, Sam, sorry.
After they kiss, Sam immediately dies.
Yes, of course.
Do you think the director's gay?
If he's not, he's definitely spent his life around musical theater gays. But I wouldn't be surprised to learn that he was.
I will give this movie points for being inclusive with gay men. However...
There's a discerning thing where every time anyone gets into a remotely homosexual style encounter, they are killed.
And I'm trying to think of the right way to put this. So the stage manager, David, is so stereotypically effeminate.
He's gay. He's gay.
Yes.
He's totally gay.
And I'm loath to say that, because obviously there are gay men that are that effeminate. I also have tendencies like that. I'm super effeminate. But
it verges on caricature.
It does. It has, it toes that line. Not I don't think it fully crosses over into character to where I'm offended by it, especially because he kind of gets a fun little moment at the end of the movie.
Yeah, I mean, the whole sequence where he saves the show and he and Liz are having that weird awkward dance and that kind of stuff, like, it's a good comedy bit.
I did laugh. I thought that was really funny. And they're, like, trying to shove each other out of the spotlight and, like, take over the stage.
Yeah, because they're both diva bitches.
Yes. I really, honestly, you make a movie, you make them the protagonists in this movie, I'm probably more likely to give it a 3 out of 5.
Yeah, I think the comedy would have worked because they're both quite broad. It's tricky, though, right? Like, you're always going to end up with your Blando Camillas as your lead. Mm-hmm. You know, no offense to Ally McDonald. She's working with what she's got.
Yeah, for sure. Absolutely.
You've always got to have your straight-laced main character. You need your Sidney Prescott.
But that's the thing, though. So, Camilla and Buddy are just so boring. And yeah, it's not... They're not interesting to watch. Watching Camilla, it's just like... I didn't care. And I was also confused as to how Roger was their guardian.
Yeah, it's like, why is your mom's lover suddenly get to take you on as, like, foster children?
I mean, not a big deal. Again, in a movie like this, which is clearly, like, heightened reality and, like, super, you know, ridiculous, not logic isn't important. But I did ask myself that question, like, wait, what? Why? Mm-hmm. And you get a lot of Wet Hot American Summer vibes from this because they're also the cooks at the camp.
Yes.
So I was half expecting a can of vegetables to start talking to them. But
better movie
and TV show. But yeah, it really sucks that we don't have a stronger character to latch onto in this movie.
Yeah, because Camilla's arc is very much like, I idolize my mother. I want to follow in her footsteps. I've got this supposedly great singing talent. But the problem is that her conflicts with Artie, to circle back around to the,
yeah,
you know,
oh, yeah,
the use of sexual intimidation and so on, that is a little bit dull and it kind of feels unnecessary. Like, it's just one additional piece that I don't know that we need because it comes to nothing. And like, I much would have rather spend time with her unofficial rivalry with Liz about, you know, like, how can they sort of one-up? Like, it would have been fun to see Liz as a Chris from Carrie character.
Mm-hmm. Well, which she does become because she literally hangs a bucket of red paint above the stage.
Mm-hmm. Yes, because this film can't help itself except to make a bunch of really forced horror movie references, as though to say, look, I watched these movies too. So here's a person who dies from getting pins stuck in their head. And it's Hellraiser. Do you get it?
It doesn't bother me that much. I mean, it's...
Oh, drinking game. There you go, everybody.
Yeah. Oh, because it doesn't bother me. It's me. I'm trying to be positive, so I'm not, like, viewed as the douchebag on this episode. That's like, oh, he hated that movie. He's just trashing it. He's hate-watching it. Which...
Oh, my God. Why is he such a shit heel?
I know. I don't know why you think you coined the term shitheel, because that term existed before you said it.
Oh, yeah. No, I know that.
Okay, I just wanted to make sure.
I'm bringing it back into the popular lexicon.
Yeah.
We are taste purveyors now, Trace.
And
we are setting the new agenda. I'm going to bring Aces back as well.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
And to touch on the comedy for this movie, the joke that stood out to me, that I was like, really, movie, this is where we're going, is when they say the kabuki, they're going to do kabuki, and the one guy goes, yeah, bukkake.
Yeah, which is also a subtle cue that he's a gay.
Yes. Listeners, by the way, bukkake is, it's when you're in an orgy, and...
Urban Dictionary this up, yep.
Yeah, and a bunch of men jack off and cum on your face at the same time. Or actually not at the same time necessarily. They could, basically, you just got cum all over your face. It's great.
Mm-hmm. Elaborate a little bit more. What is it like? How does it feel?
I've never been in a bukkake, but I've seen one. So on my computer screen, not in real life.
Sure. Mm-hmm.
So it's an obvious type of humor. Like that's what I expect from like fucking watching a CBS like 30-minute laugh track sitcom.
Yes. I much preferred the idea that they were so unaware of how offensive it might be to actually do the performance as a kabuki performance in whiteface or Asian face.
I was
like, okay, that's actually kind of clever in an offensive way, which again is another way that the film could have differentiated itself, is going with that kind of drop dead, gorgeous, offensive level humor. But it doesn't.
Watching it, I was very much like wondering, is this offensive? Because these, I mean, it's a bunch of white kids.
Yeah.
Like dressing
appropriating
up.
Appropriating Asian culture.
Yes. Yeah. Which it's a joke. Clearly, I get that. And it is funny. And that's kind of where, you know, like the line between offensive and humorous, you know, you're towing that. I think the movie does it fine because I think the movie is aware that it's super fucking offensive.
Oh, yeah. Like the movie is aware, but the characters are not.
So what do you think about the killer? Now, I'm not talking about Buddy. I'm not talking about Meatloaf. I'm talking about the metal heavy
upper ghost.
Yeah. So
that's the last time.
He says this line. I'm sorry. He sings this line several times where he goes,
oh, please sing it.
Shut your fucking face. And I want it to be like, yeah. Uncle Fucker. Like,
also a better musical.
Well, that's it. Kept reminding me of better musicals. And I'm like, don't do that. Don't make me think of movies I would rather be watching the South Park musical movie than this movie right now. And I don't even think he has a full song.
No, they're kind of all refrains in a way, aren't they?
Well, it's him in his little cellar staring at headshots, yelling at them.
Mm-hmm. Which, where is that? What set is that? Where is that meant to be located?
I think it's under the stage?
Maybe, yeah. I did love that all the kids had their own headshots, though, because I was like, oh, musical theater summer camp.
Well, I was really confused about how, if their performance was good, then it was going to be on Broadway. Like, because this critic, like, gives it a good review and it's going to go on Broadway. I was very confused by that.
Yeah, I got the impression that it would, like, maybe it would help to reinvigorate interest in the production, and then maybe Roger would get profits and that would save the camp. I don't know.
Well, that's definitely a part of it. Yeah, because the camp is going bankrupt and he needs a good review for people to donate money to it. But there also seemed to be this thing where it's like, oh, if the review's good, then the show will go to Broadway. Right. And I was a little, again, not a big deal, not the most pressing issue. Mm-hmm. This
say it
movie
again,
has.
Say it again. Say the line.
It doesn't bother me.
There we go. Okay. Yeah. I think the big issue is, like, this feels like another plot line where it's just like, but who could fucking care? Like, I don't care about Roger's need for financial solvency. I don't care whether this show becomes a hit again. Like, these are all just kind of weird little plot lines that just don't feel like they amount to anything. Because at the end of the day, I just need to know that Roger killed Minnie Driver and that he's going to try to kill Camilla to keep her quiet. Like, that's all I need to know.
But that's the thing, though. So we're talking about things that we need to care about. The movie has a tonal issue problem where it doesn't seem to know if it's a parody or a serious film. Because Camilla is treated very seriously. And the actress, Ally McDonald, plays her very seriously. There's not a hint of irony or comedy in her performance.
And same with Buddy.
Yes, same with Buddy. But then everyone else is in an entirely different movie.
Mm-hmm.
And it's very jarring, and it makes the comedy less funny. And it makes the serious moments less effective.
Which is why I do think that we are then drawn to a character like Liz, because if Liz had been the main character, she, I think, has a better tonal balance between she's got that rivalry, which you can believe in as a real grounded motivation for not getting along with Camilla. But then she's also patently ridiculous. And, like, imagining her as that lead character, I think, would have made for a film that is able to do the comedy bits that it wants while still having wacky over the top and maybe hardcore kills.
Yeah. And, I guess we can just move on to the kills then, because after...
Yeah, let's come back to the good stuff.
Yeah, so after Artie gets the C-clamp and the light bulb blowjob, then we basically... The narrative flashes through the rehearsals. It's like 30 days till opening night, 20 days till opening night, 10 days till opening night, 1 day till opening night, and then it's opening night. And this is like 15 minutes of montage.
I did like how they basically cast the entire musical on the first day of camp.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's like, wow, good thing these kids are all on their game. Like, they don't need rehearsals. They don't need to practice. Their musical instruments are ready to go on day one, and we can just cast this bitch, and then 30 days later, we're ready to do a whole production.
And I will admit to being very stressed out during the entirety of, like, the body discovery sequence, because the play stops.
Yeah.
Like, and as, like, someone who's, like, done theater, I was like, oh my god, what are they gonna do?
I don't care about any of these dead kids, but I'm really worried about that production and how are they going to fill that time.
Because
she is gone for like an hour.
Very long time. And presumably the audience is watching Liz strapped in this phantom ghost, whatever, outfit for like 30 minutes as she's tied up and just like stumbling around
and falling around.
And the orchestra's playing that da 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 da. Yeah, it's great.
And then clang on the cymbals.
Yes. So anyway, so who dies after fucking Artie? I think there's like three bodies that Camilla finds. Oh,
yeah. So I've got the names, and I can barely remember. Okay, so I don't remember which one is Whitney and which one is Sheila, but there's the annoying girl who's like, you can come in here and relax your vocal cords using the shower.
Which, okay, that also to me was like, okay, we're going to make fun of theater kids, and this is what you're going for, is the warm-up joke, which every single joke about theater uses.
Yeah, it's not particularly clever.
It's super obvious.
This is what the movie is trading in. Obvious bread and butter.
Yeah, I think that's Sheila, because Whitney is the costume girl.
So she's the pinhead kill then.
Yeah, she's the pinhead kill, which we don't even... Do we see her die? I think we just find her corpse later.
Yep, just body discovery.
Yeah. But then it kind of becomes a thing, is like, why does he kill these people?
Yeah, it makes no sense. I mean, this is a slasher trope. It's like, why don't you just kill the person that you want to kill instead of killing all these innocent bystanders who are literally just trying to amount a show? It feels like maybe the script was like, oh, wow, we haven't killed anybody in about 45 minutes. Get rid of these disposable idiots.
Well, no. So, okay. The body count in this movie, you got Minnie Driver in the opening scene. You've got that douchebag director 45 minutes into this movie dying. So that's a big gap. And then three people in the span of 10 minutes. And then, of course, Buddy and
then Roger.
Yeah. It's very oddly paced. And honestly, the most...
oddly is being kind.
The most this movie suffers is between that opening bus number and Artie's death. Is all of that. Those first 40 minutes are just like...
You're all I really wanted.
No, there's that, and then that song that the young Camilla sings, all of life's a song to sing, so sing with all your heart. It's really upsetting.
Not in the way that you might expect.
No.
Upsetting, like, please don't make me watch this anymore.
Oh, I'll talk about the music more in a bit, because it's extremely forgettable. So, you know, there's some great kills with body discoveries, and Camilla's running around backstage. And the thing is, don't care, because you don't care about Camilla.
No.
Like, she could have died, and Liz could have been brought as the protagonist, and I would have been like, all right, I'm into it. Like, I don't even know.
Yeah. She's just such a forgettable character. The only thing that I liked about that entire tail end sequence, apart from, you know, yay, kills, because we're back into a horror movie, I liked that she got so dirty and disheveled. And
oh, yeah.
Seeing her makeup contrasted with Buddy's when the mask comes off, I was like, oh, okay, it kind of looks like he's in his own twisted performance of this musical.
So, all right, so she finds all these bodies and she leaves. All the while, Liz is on stage tied up in an outfit and just, I don't know, apparently stumbling around for 30 minutes. And
yes, and doing dances with David.
David, yes. And all right, so there was one.
Because I know you can't remember any of these characters' names.
I don't care about these characters. So, no, but there was one part, though. So when he unmasks Liz and he's like, you just had to be in the show, didn't you? Well, fine. Get out there. She's just out there and she's staring at the audience like her gag's off or whatever. And she starts kind of singing and he's like, sing louder. And he like throws something at her. It was so funny. I mean, so again, I'm laughing, and that's what I wanted to do more of in this movie, and I didn't.
Again, like, having those two as our main characters would have been a hell of a lot more amusing than having, like, Camilla or having to deal with, you know, Sam's process of discovery and blah, whatever.
So, Camilla makes it to the kitchen, I think, and then you've got the killer. And it's revealed to be Buddy, and he's got Roger tied to a chair. It's so... I remember seeing this for the first time, and this was like almost five years ago. And, man, I don't think I've seen a less underwhelming killer reveal in a long... I can't even think of one.
Well, yeah, because you're basically, at this point, you're meant to be wondering whether it's going to be Joel or whether it's going to be Buddy.
Wait, so... In case people forgot, who's Joel? Because we have not talked about him at all.
Joel is her equally boring love interest who also works tech.
I couldn't even tell you what he looked like. I mean, he has black hair. I think he has black hair.
Yeah, it's kind of like curly black hair, but he looks kind of similar to Buddy. So when the mask comes off, you're like, wait, which one of them is it? Oh, he's 6 feet tall, so it's Buddy.
Buddy's wearing like half blackface when the mask comes off.
Ooh.
He is!
We're hitting all those racial...
I mean, obviously, I know it's not intentional. Like, he's just wearing... It's because, obviously, when you're wearing the mask, you have to cover your mask. But he's literally from his, like, upper lip down, it's black.
He said he didn't want to be in the show, and yet, there he is, covered in makeup and wearing the costume.
Yeah, he just kind of yells, and he's like, I didn't want you to be in the show. I killed everyone. I've been trying to get revenge for 10 fucking years. Mm-hmm. And then he dies.
Yeah, like, he's surprisingly ineffectual, considering he's at this point managed to kill a bunch of people. You're like, oh, I don't quite understand how you got away with it, because you suck.
Again, not a big deal. It doesn't bother me, but it does bother me that his singing voice isn't his voice, because it's a totally different voice.
Shut your fucking face!
Here's the thing. Disney movies, the best songs... for karaoke are the villain songs, and this villain doesn't get a song. It's so fucking stupid. The missed opportunities that this movie has and doesn't take advantage of are ridiculous.
Yeah, I think it's just because he's mostly singing to himself, so you don't want an entire musical production. There's obviously other ways that this could have been done. I think maybe Jerome thought that just by giving him a completely different musical styling, so doing it more in that kind of rock opera kind of way, as opposed to everybody else's more traditionally musical kind of fashion, was enough to distinguish the tone. But,
I will say that Roger's death with the buzzsaw is pretty good.
Yeah, because it is gory as fuck. Like, the kills are good in this movie when you see them. Mm-hmm. It's disappointing that of the ones that we, like, there isn't a huge body count, so it's disappointing that we don't really get to see all of them. Most of them are pretty good.
It does bother me whenever I see reviews of, like, a horror comedy, and like, well, it wasn't very scary. I'm like, well, here's the thing. You give me a horror comedy, you either lean towards scary or you lean towards comedy. If one of them is successful, it's fine. Mm-hmm. Like, I'm thinking, like, Drag Me to Hell, a horror comedy. I actually think the movie is very successful in both the horror and the comedy. Good job.
See, but I would argue that the reason that that movie works is because so much of the quote-unquote horror is, like, gross out.
Right.
Whereas this film doesn't have that, right? Like, it's not gross at any point.
Yeah, probably so.
Maybe the Felicia light bulb.
But then, like, okay, like, even like Sorority Row, which is a horror comedy, it's not scary in the slightest, but it's funny, and that makes it work. This movie doesn't succeed at any of that. It's not scary, it's not funny. Can you tell me a single name of one of these songs?
Oh, God, no. I can barely remember the plot of this movie, and I watched it 2 days ago. So, no, I can't tell you any of the song names.
And that's what's upsetting to me. Like, it shouldn't be that hard to come up with catchy songs. Fuck, I mean, it's probably even worse than a 2 out of 5 for me at this point, because I'm just, like, talking about it. Like, it's not scary, it's not funny, and the songs aren't good. And that sucks. That really sucks. I want a better movie.
Once again, Repo, the genetic opera.
I was trying to think of horror musicals. Now, you know, we've got Rocky Horror.
Yeah.
You've got Repo. Repo's not good.
No. But it's better than this.
Well, and you can tell that the people in that movie, like, cared. And, like, Darren Lynn Bousman was into what he was doing. There's a lot of care done. It looks cheap as shit. But it's kind of, it's an enjoyable watch for as shitty as it is. I've never seen Phantom of the Paradise. Have you?
I've not. I've heard good things about it. Yeah, sorry, I'm looking at the list.
It was brought up in a lot of reviews for this. Listeners, if you're rolling your eyes at us right now, trust me, we will cover Phantom of the Paradise. It is on our list. And if you stick around... Oh, yes, it is, because it might be celebrating a certain 5 or 0 anniversary before the end of the year.
Oh, did it come out this year? Celebrating a 0 anniversary?
Well, no, I mean it ended in a 0 or a 5. It's like when
it's been out for 50 years?
It's like when you read an article where it's like, this is the movie's 23rd anniversary, and it's like, what the fuck are you writing about this? You save it for a 0 or a 5. It's 25 or 30. Like, that's when you do it. I want to say it's the 45th anniversary of Phantom of the Paradise, but I could be wrong. But, listeners, if you stick around through the end of the year, you may hear an episode on it. And by may, I mean you will.
We'll see. I didn't agree to this.
It's on our spreadsheet.
All right, I agreed to it, though. Okay, other horror musicals, and I'm using the term lightly because they've got fucking Phantom of the Opera on here, and I'm like, ladies and gentlemen, that is not a horror musical.
That is a musical. Wait, no. Fuck you. Why is that not a horror musical? It is a bad idea. Yeah, I'm fully fucking aware of what we're talking about. The Phantom of the Opera is a movie that is a musical about a murderous phantom.
I would say it's closer to like a love affair musical.
Well, okay.
But it's a love triangle with a guy in a mask.
It's based on a horror novel.
Yeah, so the novel is horror.
So I will confess, I saw that movie in theaters, and I actually really do enjoy that movie. However, I rewatched like YouTube clips of some of the songs, and when I was doing it, I was like, this movie is not directed well at all.
No. Oh God, no, it's terrible.
Joel Schumacher, even the title track, Phantom of the Opera, is very poorly edited and poorly shot, and they fucking cut a verse out, which, fuck you, Joel Schumacher. But this is just really upset.
Joel Schumacher is not a friend to the gays, so obviously he's going to do badly by us on a musical.
But I do think Emmy Rossum's really good in it. I think that...
Yeah, she's the best part.
Gerard Butler is a terrible phantom.
He's actually fucking awful.
My big issue with that movie is that if you listen to the Broadway soundtrack, and we probably have lost a bunch of our listeners by now, but is it Michael Crawford? Is that who originated the role of the phantom? I think it's Michael Crawford. His songs sound very tortured. Like, when he sings, it's like an anguished, like, upset person. Gerard Butler plays the phantom very angrily. And in the Broadway show, you empathize with the phantom. Whereas with Gerard Butler, you're like, wow, you're kind of a dick.
Yeah. I mean, I feel like that's Gerard Butler's kind of resting default status.
Mm-hmm.
He's not capable of a broad range of emotions.
Yeah. So, okay, sorry. I digressed. My fault.
Okay. I do have other horror musicals if you want to think of a list.
Off the top of my head, I'm thinking Little Shop of Horrors. Mm-hmm.
Which is... that's one that nails. I mean, arguably, it's obviously it has horrific elements, but I think a lot of people would classify it more in the comedy realm. But
it is. But And if you're thinking of the original ending, too, which the Blu-ray does include the original ending, it's horrific. That movie blends tone very well, but I don't think it did very well on its original release, whereas I think it's definitely a cult film.
Sweeney Todd.
Oh, Sweeney Todd. Yeah, which I really like. I've never seen the stage production. I've only seen the Tim Burton film, but I remember people being very upset because the trailer did not market that movie as a musical.
God.
And people went into it. I sat in Hairspray, like the 2007 Hairspray, and people next to me were like, this is a musical, and I'm like, you're fucking stupid. Go die.
Well, if you saw the original John Waters movie, that's not a musical.
The fucking trailer told, whatever.
Doesn't matter. I know. It's, yeah, people should know better. And I guess the most recent one that people would be very upset if we overlooked would be Anna and the Apocalypse.
Oh, yeah. I really do like that movie. I've seen it 3 times. I saw it festival premiere, and then I saw it twice in theaters over Christmas break, like I'm in school. I'm sorry, over the holidays. I liked it a little bit less each time I watched it.
Yeah, but at least you can say that the musical numbers are catchy.
Mm-hmm. No, for sure.
I feel like it's got a better balance on tone. But yeah, I was a little disappointed. It wasn't quite the slam dunk I was hoping for.
My issue with the movie is that the dramatic beats don't work, and probably a quarter of the jokes fall flat. Maybe more for based on your mileage. But I do think the girl that plays Anna is really, really good.
Mm-hmm. I actually quite like the lesbian friend as well.
Oh, she has the best voice, like hands down. And the fact that she didn't get more things to say was quite upsetting to me.
And you know she's Canadian, right?
Yeah, sure.
I just had to bring it up because the movie that we're meant to be discussing is Canadian, and I feel the need to distance myself.
Represent!
So, no, I will not be.
So, back to Stage Fright.
Right, okay.
The songs are not good in Stage Fright. Nothing in this movie is memorable in terms of the music. It's not catchy. It's not... Oh, and here's my biggest thing with movie musicals. There's no choreography.
Oh, God, no. No.
It's upsetting to me because it's not, like, it takes a lot of work to fucking synchronized dancing is a staple of musicals.
Mm-hmm.
Especially on stage. And to digress a tiny bit, like, the failing of the first Mamma Mia movie, besides the fact that it's a bad movie, is...
Oh, shit, we're about to lose so many listeners.
Well, no, I love it, but there's no dancing. There's no choreography in that movie. Whereas the sequel puts actual choreography in it, which makes the sequel better.
Is it because there's younger people in the sequel?
Maybe.
When you cast a bunch of, like, 60-year-old actors, you're not going to get a lot of less-than-wooden-leg performances out of them.
Yeah. And this movie doesn't have that. This movie has people just standing there and singing and got, ugh, bleh. Makes me so mad. I'm so angry about this stupid movie, and it makes me so upset.
So happy 5 years, Stage Fright. God bless ya.
May we get a better horror slasher musical at some point? I mean, what's a good one for you besides Little Shop of Horrors?
No, I mean, I knew you were going to ask that, and I immediately was like, so I guess we're just going to wait for someone to come along and nail this, because clearly it's more difficult than we're giving any of these films credit for, because there is no slam dunk film.
Mm-mm, there isn't.
I mean, I think different films have their strengths and their fandoms, but I don't think... I mean, yeah, I would probably say Little Shop of Horrors is probably the best.
I haven't seen it in a very long time, actually.
Steve Martin as the dentist.
No, I know. And I love Ellen Green, who plays Audrey. I really like her a lot. And Rick Moranis is Rick Moranis. But, oh, I do love Suddenly Seymour. I've totally karaoke'd that before. But it's really hard to find a good Audrey to karaoke with you.
I saw it live, so I have a soft spot for it. So.
Oh, I've done Feed Me at karaoke, by the way, and it's really fun. But then you got to find a Seymour because I'm the plant because I'm a bass.
There's so many, I think, unintentional sexual connotations coming out in so many of the things that you're saying tonight. And I can't keep up with it. But please tell me more about this Bukkake experience that you had, because I feel like people really want.
I realize I probably didn't need to explain Bukkake to a lot of our listeners, but in case some of them are under the age of 18, which if you are, you shouldn't be listening to this because this is an explicit podcast.
Totally tell your parents to fuck off and listen to it. We're giving you a sexual education. You need this.
I'm saying this in case they're listening to it, like, in front of their parents in the car or something.
Oh, right. Okay, so stick around and Trace and I will tell you how to clear your browsing history. Because that's really important.
You sound like a pedophile right now. Anyway, so, yeah, I mean, I don't want to rag on this movie anymore. So, I mean, like, that is stage fright. Mm-hmm. I am a very positive person. I don't enjoy disliking movies. I don't want to shit on someone's art. I don't want to dislike. Who wants to go into a movie and say, oh, I don't want to like this. I wanted to like this movie.
No.
It's so upsetting to me. I don't like this movie. I don't like this movie. It's not good. And the fact that I own this, I'm literally holding the Blu-ray in my hands right now, staring at fucking Camilla's stupid face. Mm-hmm. And just like, why? Why did I buy this movie?
I don't know, but I feel like you should blame Donato for it, to be honest.
Oh, trust me. Whenever we promote this episode, I'm going to like...
Just tag him in it.
I'm going to screenshot their quotes.
Yeah. Okay. So, in my opinion, this film is not great. Mm-hmm. It does have some good kills. Some, particularly the early stuff, is actually kind of enjoyable.
Yeah.
And for me, it really begins to fall flat once Camilla takes the lead and we have to go into the rehearsals and the killing essentially disappears completely.
I would agree.
It starts strong, and I think part of the reason that the film suffers as a result is because you think that there's promise in it, and you think you're in for a good time, and then it just dwindles a lot of that goodwill away.
Yeah, I think the film overestimates how much we care about Camilla. I mean, that's really the major fault of this movie, and the fact that we are stuck. That's the thing, when we're watching her discover the bodies, and then it's intercut with the David and Liz stuff... Mm-hmm. When it cuts away to Camilla, and I'm like, wait, I want to see what David and Liz are doing when they are tertiary douchebag characters. That's a problem, movie.
Yeah. Please try to make your lead protagonist dynamic and interesting. Make us care about them.
I'll give you that. When she comes out on stage and she's a fucking mess, it's pretty cool.
It's a good final image. And then, of course, the movie just has to hammer it home that just... let's leave no stone unturned with that, you know, I know what you did last summer. Final little jump scare.
I thought the same thing. I was like, it's I Know What You Did Last Summer. This movie came out 17 years after I Know What You Did Last Summer. And they're giving us a mirror, like, scare. Mm-hmm.
And for what?
Nothing.
I don't know about you, but that didn't scare the fuck out of me.
It did not. And then she wakes up and then it just... and fades to black? Like it,
fade to black.
What? Also, she doesn't seem upset over anything, despite the fact that the whole movie she's super depressed over her mom's death. Yet, her brother's death, slash mm-hmm. him being a murderer and all that shit, didn't seem to faze her, and now she's famous, and she's great.
Well, she's really heavily medicated by now.
You don't know that. You don't see pills on her vanity.
No, she's like on lithium. She's on coke.
Those are two very different types of drugs. Now. If you were doing lithium and coke, I feel like you'd be just normal. Because that makes sense.
It's uppers and downers, and she's tweaking, man. Like, oh yeah.
Okay. Yeah.
There's an unrated cut of this where she's just like fucking black out, messed up at the end.
For sure.
It's on your Blu-ray. Donato heads up.
Yeah, no, it's great. And there's a bunch of extra features on this Blu-ray, including a commentary with the writer, director, co-composer Jerome Sable and co-composer Eli Battalion. Maybe I'll watch that if I want to hear them jerk off to themselves. I don't know.
Ooh, homework for listeners. Seek that commentary out and tell us what we missed. Or, you know, don't.
Luckily, I don't... oh, whatever. Jerome Sable, if you're listening to this, I'm really sorry. I really hated your movie.
Or reach out to us and tell us if it is the version that you always intended. Because I kind of feel like this isn't... I don't know. This doesn't quite feel like everything that it could have been. And I wonder if it was like a money thing or a three editors thing or... I don't know. Maybe we're wrong. Maybe this is like the dream project he always wanted to make.
So yeah, that is stage fright.
It sure is. Now, for your game.
I was going to say, it's like you have a game for me, don't you?
It's not even a game. This is a challenge. And it's going to be tough for you.
Fuck.
No, I'm kidding. I'll try to soften the blow. Originally, it was going to be, what would you do to fix this movie? But instead, it's going to be, what is one thing that you would do to fix this movie? But I feel like you're going to cop out and take the easy way, so I'm going to remove it from the table. You cannot say, make Camilla more interesting.
Fuck!
It's too obvious.
I know, I was going to say recast Camilla. Oh, wait, so. Oh, fuck, no, I'm sorry. Not recast, I'm sorry. Miss McDonald, you're great. Your role is terrible. Okay, so I cannot alter Camilla in any shape, way, or form.
No.
I would, A, give the villain a song.
Okay.
And also just, I would add choreography. And, okay. Like, literally any choreography. And I would make the songs more melodic and catchy. That's the thing. You give me good music or good comedy. Ideally, both, obviously. But clearly this movie can't be bothered.
Aim for one.
If I'm choosing which one I would rather have, I would rather have a good soundtrack that I can keep with me in my car.
So you want a catchy soundtrack?
I would rather have a catchy soundtrack with some good musical numbers and like dance numbers. Okay. I can handle bad comedy if you give me that. Mm-hmm. Because for me, like, I'm not going to watch this movie all the time. But if I have this soundtrack on my phone, I'm going to listen to it in my car. But I'm obviously not now.
No.
Because it's shit.
Certainly not.
So, that's my fix for it.
Okay, I'll accept it.
What's yours?
Obviously, the pacing is a huge deal. So, I would want more kills earlier so as to not have 45-minute gaps between first murder and second murder. But I think the big issue for me is that by the time we get to the killer reveal, the movie feels like it has really worn out its welcome, and I don't care to then have Roger suddenly turn into a murderer. So I haven't thought out all the details, but I would have liked to have seen the killer unmasked and do his final big thing on stage. Because I think everything about this movie is about the performativity and the connection between, you know, the roles in the musical as well as, you know, the kills and that kind of stuff. So I think ending it on the stage is the appropriate amount of meta that you could have some fun, you know, a la Scream 2. Essentially.
Yeah, you're totally right, honestly. Like, the ending of the movie with, like, it's all part of the play, blah, blah, blah. Super obvious. But yeah, I think having the killer do a number on, and, like, do something on the stage at the end, I think that would have been really cool. I think you're right.
Because then she could have killed him with the bandsaw, and then everybody thinking, oh, wow, this is just the stunning climax to this film. That, I think, would have been the appropriate amount of horror comedy that maybe would have rescued or fixed some of those issues. Not entirely, but at least it would have played better.
Yeah.
Yeah. Just a lot of issues.
Well, I own this movie forever now, so I guess in 5 years I'll watch it again and see if I like it more.
We'll revisit it in 5 years.
Yeah.
2024, come back. It's going to be super exciting.
10-year anniversary for Stage Fright.
Jesus Christ. Okay, so Trace, where can people find you on these here interwebs?
People can find me on Twitter at Trace Thurman. And where can people find you, Joe?
I can be found at B Stole My Remote. That's B, the letter.
And of course, if you're tweeting about us, please be sure to use the hashtag HorrorQueers in your tweets so we can find you. You can also email us at HorrorQueers@gmail.com. But if you want more of us, please visit our Patreon page at patreon.com/HorrorQueers, where you can listen to episodes on things like Last House on the Left and Jordan Peele's Us. We'll have an episode on that. And of course, if you are a patron and you're listening to this episode, we'd like to thank you. Thank you for thinking that we're worth paying money for, and we hope you enjoyed all of our exclusive content. And of course, we'd like to thank Bloody Disgusting for sponsoring us and allowing us to promote our podcast. So keep reading Bloody, as well as our monthly Horror Queers articles. Joe, What are we covering next week?
So, we are moving on to significantly greener pastures, and we're going to stay with the sibling drama. So, we're going to be checking out Mike Flanagan's Oculus, which is also celebrating its 5th-year anniversary.
I'm actually very excited about this. Listeners, I know you may be wary because there's no queer content, but as Joe and I have mentioned in our past episodes, siblings...
We're going to do whatever the fuck we want, so you fuck off.
Yeah, that too. But okay. siblings can be very helpful when you're coming out. And that's something we want to discuss, is like how siblings can trust each other and, you know, mm-hmm. be there for each other. Also, Mike Flanagan's great. And if you don't think so, you're wrong.
Yeah. I agree with all of those statements.
So, on that note, before we leave you, I would just like to say, cross out stage fright.
And cross out horror queers.
This episode was brought to you by the Bloody Disgusting Podcast Network, delivering your weekly horror podcast fix. To find more episodes of this show and others, please visit bloodydisgusting.com/podcastnetwork.